Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'll tell you, man, anytime I get to hang out with you guys, I'm a happy camper.
Thanks, man. I don't know if he might feel that way about you. I'm not sure if he feels that way totally about me.
Well, he gets
me.
His fix of you during the regular season.
He gets his fix. I mean, they asked him off camera at the Super Bowl, like, what was the first thing that jumps out to you about Sims and Florio? Yeah. And his first comment was that they're assholes. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Is that correct, though? Is that correct?
It is in some ways. You're right.
They stand up for themselves.
Call it like he sees it.
Well, good morning. We're just a couple of assholes hanging out on a Tuesday. Thanks a lot, Devin.
Sorry,
I hadn't
London.
Heard about that before.
You didn't know about
you
that?
You know what?
Yeah.
No, he must like us because he played for one for over a decade.
Damn, turn the tables on him. That's right. he played for one who was a coach and was pretty awesome. And that's like standard protocol for being a good coach. You got to have a little bit of, jerk in you to be a good football coach. I try not to swear so much here early on a Tuesday morning, since you've already set the show and a bad standard here and how you've done that. But yeah, at the Super Bowl.
Wait a minute. Johnny, casual F-bomb last week with no build-up, no warning, just like we're hanging around on the street corner, just shooting the breeze.
Bam.
And out comes the F-word.
Bam, right.
So don't. You've already
stretched
this rubber band
a little bit. You got to warm everybody up. You just come in throwing out, bad words, right? You got to ease them into it. That's how I try to do it, at least. Yeah, right.
I used the word that was quoted at the top of the show. There was relevance to it. It wasn't gratuitous, and
I never quite understood. Yeah.
I think we've had this conversation before, but I can't really remember. So if I can't, there's a good chance nobody else can either. This is a word where the two halves of it can be said without consequence in this day and age. You can say ass and you can say hole. But for some reason, when you mash them together, it becomes something that you probably shouldn't say, and I probably shouldn't have said it. I will not hang my head in shame, though, again, because I am working with the master of random gratuitous profanity, and you never know when it's going to come flying out of his mouth. I'm surprised it was even bleeped at the top of the show.
Yeah, disappointing.
And no, I did
disappointing.
Not know.
Yeah.
I did not know that Devin said that about us at the Super Bowl.
Right, so they were like off. You know how we did like the little like TikTok videos, social media videos on the side, right? We had our Mackenzie there, who's great at, handling a lot of that stuff for us. She was asking Devin questions, about, his year and NBC and us, and one of them was like us, and that was the first thing he was, let me just state this right off the bat. The one thing about both of them is they're, and then he said the word, right? And, he giggled a little bit, of course, but then he praised us after that. Then he started to give us some praise. But, yeah, we had fun yesterday. Devin came on. We talked about the DBs, the rankings I had last week, right? He saw things very similar to me in a lot of ways, but it's always good to have him. He's got a good football mind. He's a great guy.
Kristen has sent me the video in question. I do recall him saying some things about
that,
like...
That was the day he was, you know, 15 minutes late to the show that he was supposed to be there for, right? Remember? So he should be one to talk. On the day he was supposed to be there, Mr. New England Patriot way, no days off, he was supposed to be there for a 7 a.m. start of the show, and he rolled in at like 7:17 or whatever time we started the show out there during that time.
He was about 10 minutes late that day, but this is the guy who's always there at 11:30 a.m. on Sunday when we don't have our meeting until 12:15. Every time I walk through the door, he's already in his seat. And I get there a lot earlier than you, I know that, because you usually come breezing in once the meeting's already started. The closest guy, the guy who lives the closest
That's
to
right.
the studio is yep. always late. But Devin is always there earlier than anyone. And so the day he does our show, he's 10 minutes late, walks on the set while it's live. So anyway.
Well, when you're there.
I don't know whether to be hurt. I don't know whether to be hurt by that term from him or to be more endeared.
I think it's endeared. He's from Jersey in New York. And like you said, the guy that coached him was like that anyways. I'm taking it as endearing, and I'm not looking back. I'm going to be – I feel good about it.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm late for the Sunday, you know, our 12:15 read the schedule meeting, right? I'm late for that. Oh, the Giants play the Cowboys. Okay. Oh. Or the Eagles.
Wait a minute.
But I'm late. I'm late. And because, you know, part of it is like you. It's the same thing. You're going to be able to understand this. I'm late because I'm here almost every day during the year. So, like, yeah, it's almost like a second home. It's like you with this show, right? Pete was in my ear, you know, calling you out. He's going, you're usually the one that's late to this show, right? You're at home. You're comfortable.
I've never been late.
But you're always the last one to sit down. And if we do have a technical difficulty, we can never get it fixed because you've sat down at 6:58 and 47 seconds, and we don't have time.
Wait, but most of the technical difficulties that happen take more time to fix than even if I had shown up at a time that would be viewed as acceptable to you.
Because
I've been in that studio. I know when you show up. You don't show up all that long before me, because on Mondays during the season, when I'm there at 6:30, a half hour before the show starts, there's a couple times where I'm wondering, when's he going to show
up? That's a different,
That's
a different morning. Well, because
I'm
getting done with a podcast at 12:30 at night, so that's where that day is a little cut it closer.
Tough life we have here. Very tough life we have. Talking about football, and the only real challenge is to actually be where we're supposed to be on time. But anyway, so.
Kristen's calling you out too. Kristen put something in there to say she can't fix those problems as quickly because the show has started. So basically what Kristen was doing was going, no, Mike, if you sat down at 6:52, like most normal people on TV, that these problems would be fixed. That's what she threw the challenge flag. The viewers couldn't see it. And they've overturned your call and your statement, so you're wrong.
So 6:52 is the magic number. That must be when you sit down, because that's just some random. The show starts at 7, so most normal people show up at 6:52. I would say that most normal people probably show up a lot earlier than that.
Probably, yeah. I usually sit down 6:48, 6:47. That's usually when I'm around here, right around there.
I remember when we started this show as a lunchtime streaming only thing back in 2011, like you were still playing.
Yeah,
right?
Just done.
Started this back then, I'd like show up a half hour ahead of time, and I eventually got to the point where it's like, well, what am I sitting here for?
Right,
like I know what the show is. Like we don't need to prep. We know we carry it around all the time. We know what we're going to talk about all the time. And we've done this so many times. You know, some people you see on TV, they're reading off of a teleprompter, everything's scripted. Like, we just talk about whatever because we've done it for so long and we can talk about anything. We have proven. I don't know that this is really a skill that's marketable anywhere, including in this context, but we kind of have proven we can talk about any frickin' thing that you would want to talk about for a full 2 hours if we want to. So, a lot of hot air, I guess, and nonsense, but it doesn't require a lot of prep to just sit here and spew hot air and nonsense for 2 hours.
Well, yeah, it's like we always talk about it. Once you live it, you don't have to prepare. I don't have to sit, you know, at nighttime, there's things last night, got to read a few things, whatever, right? Just to stay on top of the details or whatever else. But, yeah, my life is watch football, watch film, talk to people in the league, whatever. I do that all the time, and that prepares me for the show more times than not. And then, you keep up with the current events and all that. I think you're kind of in the same boat as me. Speaking of current events, before we get to the NFL and all that, right, did you watch your girl last night?
Which one are you talking about?
Well,
your
side girl, that, not your wife,
I
your
was
side
team
girl.
Reese. I was Team Reese last night. Team Reese, Team Mulkey.
Oh, okay.
I was LSU last night. I wanted to see LSU win. I've had enough of the Golden Child.
That's right. Your match
cheated
that
the
West
Mountaineers
Virginia
last
game.
Week.
Right, right. I forgot you were bitter.
Still hold a grudge.
Yep. That was fun to watch, though. It was. I tuned it in like late in the second quarter. And then, of course, the third quarter is when she caught on fire and started making some insane threes. But it's just amazing. It is. It's amazing her outreach to the sport, right? And that's a cool little rivalry. I don't like, I don't really know what it's all about, but I see some of it, like the stuff on social media sometimes with Angel Reese, and I don't understand what people are on her about, right? When she competes, she's got a smile on her face, whatever. What, she put a ring in front of Caitlin Clark's face last year? Like, whoop-de-doo.
The thing is, she was giving Caitlin Clark a taste of what Caitlin Clark supposedly was always doing to other opponents.
Yeah, right, right.
So when the tables got turned, because that's what Caitlin Clark, you can't see me,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can't
that's,
see me.
You can't
right.
see me from right. a wrestler or something.
Right.
I guess she had been doing that to other teams that Iowa had beaten, and that's what prompted the payback, the turning of the tables on Caitlin Clark last year. But because most people didn't know what was going on until they stumbled over the championship game, Angel Reese became the villain.
Right, right. So. Gotcha. That's what happened. But either way, it was fun. And Caitlin Clark's amazing. And, yeah, the outreach is, still amazes me, right? My mother-in-law wants to sit on the couch last night, like, who doesn't even really care about sports all that much. She's kind of in her older age, starting to like it a little bit. But I was like, oh, hey, I'm going to go in here and turn on, Caitlin Clark, oh, gosh, I'll come watch. Oh, man, she's amazing. Let me go see. Right? I mean, it's amazing what one female, one athlete has done for a sport that has brought it to another level as far as eyeballs on it and people wanting to tune in.
That's the one name that stands above all others in this college basketball season, men's or women's.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's the first time that's ever happened. That the biggest name in the sport comes from the women's side of the equation. And I remember seeing some speculation when the tournament started last month that the women's tournament might end up having higher ratings across the board than the men's tournament.
Wow.
And hey, as long as Iowa keeps winning, that's the case.
Yeah.
If Iowa had lost to the lowly Mountaineers last week, the ratings wouldn't be as high. So I'm still... I think if West Virginia had gotten Iowa, not in Iowa's building, West Virginia would have won. And West Virginia was too low in the bracket, and the way it worked out, when you're the 8th seed, you get the 1 seed in round 2, and the way it worked out this year, playing Caitlin Clark and Iowa in their building. Because look at what's happened since then. I think West Virginia gave them a better game, clearly gave them a better game than either of the two they've gotten since then, with the round of 16 and the Elite Eight. So So yeah, I'm still salty about that.
Yeah, apparently.
I was team LSU last night. Okay. by the way, we're going to do a draft later in the show that is inspired by this. And I don't like calling it revenge. It's not really revenge because, like, unless there's a Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan component to the situation, it really isn't revenge when somebody just goes out and wins a game. I always say that in football. Like, it's not really revenge. You came and you did your job and you did it well and you scored more points. You know, unless, like, Albert Haynesworth stomps on someone's forehead, which he did to Andre Garrard. His name came up over the weekend because he's one of the assistant coaches for one of the UFL teams. I think San Antonio. But it's not – there's no revenge component. But still, it's easy. It's simple.
What do you mean? What are you, like, getting technical with the counselor and the lawyer and the stand over here? Of course there's revenge.
I just don't like calling it revenge.
What is your problem with the word revenge? What you'll say asshole freely, but revenge you got a problem with. What's the problem? I don't understand.
I just don't think, as I said last night, revenge only arises when someone goes above and beyond the boundaries of what's acceptable. When you show up and you're competing, like if you and I would compete at something.
Right. If we were playing one-on-one basketball and you beat me and 2 weeks later we were going to play again, all I'd be thinking about is I got to get my revenge. Get his butt back on the court. You're crazy. It's revenge. It's sports revenge. It's not,
you
know.
Wait a minute. You spelled a word right. This is a monumental day. Do we have confetti?
I thought I messed it up. When you said wait a minute, I was like, damn, did I mess up revenge?
No. You got it right, which is far more significant, frankly. But it's not revenge. It's revenge if while we're playing, I slice your Achilles tendon.
Why does it have to go to that? Why does it have to be like get your Tommy gun out and then that's all of a sudden that's revenge? I don't understand that.
Well, the example I used last night was it's revenge like if somebody shows up and poops in someone's dishwasher.
Well, that's great.
Revenge.
Yeah.
Them.
Well, that goes beyond revenge. That goes to fighting words.
Time for a new dishwasher also.
Apparently.
But I don't think there's any coming back from that. Not that I've ever been involved in that. That's just what popped into my head last night is the example of what would be revenge.
Thank you.
It's otherwise you're just doing your job. It's a nameless, faceless opponent. Isn't that what they tell us all the time? You're not playing X team. You're going out there and doing your job, and the goal is to win. It's not beyond the boundaries of what you're trying to do. So that's why, I mean, I don't know. I guess you're kind of talking.
good. I like that. That's one of my favorite segments.
I just always thought it was a little much.
I know. It's a strong word, but I know. I know what you're saying in a literal sense, but don't be so literal, right? It's just a sport
talk.
Well,
and Caitlin Clark said it herself.
Yeah.
It's not revenge.
Right.
This is just the next game on the path to an attempt to win a championship. And I think if you get too twisted up in it as revenge, I guess there's a way it can help you.
Yeah,
but I think
it can hurt you.
Not, it hurts you.
Right.
Because you're taking it. You're holding.
Getting too emotionally
tight.
Involved,
it's too
and you might. Yes,
too
exactly
personal.
Right. There's something to that. There's a line you don't want to cross. Right. You know, you see that team that sometimes is worried about revenge too much, and they're the team that gets the personal foul and kind of loses their cool because they're trying to prove their point. You know, to such a degree. But yeah, I get you. There is a fine line. There's no doubt about that. I've been a part of a few games like that where, you know, teams are a little too charged up because they're trying to get back for something that happened the previous year or earlier that year.
That was always one of the concerns, not with the asshole Devin McCourty played for, but the asshole he played with in Tom Brady, that if he got too emotional.
Sure.
If he got too intense.
Right.
And caught up in feelings other than football, it would mess him up. I remember his first game back from the Deflategate suspension. That was a big concern. They won that game. I think it was against the Browns, if I recall correctly. There's a chance I don't. But when he came back from that, it's like, yeah, we're not 100% sure that he's going to be on top of his game today because, you know, you can't just go out and be a cyborg if you have these personal feelings that overcome what it is that you go out and do so mechanically and so well. So, yes, revenge can become a detrimental feeling from the people who are trying to get it because it gets in the way of performance. Maybe that's why I counsel against against giving into feelings of revenge, because it can have a detrimental effect. All right. Time for the news today. And we only mentioned this briefly yesterday because it's a news story. It's a developing story. There isn't really much to say. But it is problematic for the Chiefs and receiver Rashee Rice. The news first hit on Sunday that there was a collision involving a couple of cars that became a six-car pileup in Dallas. Two sports cars involved. Police believe they were street racing. One of them registered to Rashee Rice. It now comes out via NBC5 in Dallas that Rice had leased a Lamborghini that was involved in a alleged street race with a Corvette that sparked the six-car collision. And there's still an open question as to who was actually driving. There are photographs of men walking away from the scene. That's the problem here. Here's the video from WFAA of the actual collision. There go the two cars weaving in and out of traffic, and there's the collision. Looks like street racing to me, and there are some new laws in Texas regarding the consequences of street racing. The bigger problem for Rice, if he was driving, is leaving the scene of an accident involving injury. That video is going to be very telling. They're going to pick that apart frame by frame, who's getting out of that Lamborghini and from what side.
Is that the car there? That's what I wasn't sure. Like,
the Lamborghini. It's the SUV.
It's
Urus.
That one.
The Lamborghini Urus.
Yes. Gotcha. Right. But you're right. They're going to dissect that, you know, clearly. And clearly it's two people racing down the highway, and one got... Oh, I'm losing, and I'm going to go in between these two cars and try to fit through there, and they didn't fit. So you're right. This video right here is going to be closely watched.
Watch the Lamborghini right there.
Yeah, they
both get out on the passenger side. There's clearly somebody driving. I don't know that either of those guys is Rashee Rice, but this is the issue. The car's registered to him. The lawyer from the company that owned the car that leased it to Rice said under the lease agreement he's required to be driving. That doesn't mean he is driving.
Right.
That doesn't mean he was driving.
Right.
And I did some research under Texas law to see if there's like a presumption that the person to whom the car is registered is driving. Because if you have, here's the hypothetical that may or may not happen here. If you have, and people are saying the guy on the right is in the, yeah,
with
on the right in
with
the black
the red do-rag on his hair.
Because there's a picture of him earlier in the day with family, and it looks like it's the same T-shirt. So let's say those four guys all came out of the Lamborghini.
Yeah, certainly looks like him there on the right.
If none of them will talk to police, and no one is required to talk to police. Now, I guess what you can say is we're only going to charge one guy, so the other three, they still have a right against self-incrimination. That's a problem, even if you're not charged. If you were possibly driving, you don't have to say anything. You can invoke your Fifth Amendment privilege. And if nobody says anything, how do they ever prove beyond a reasonable doubt who was actually driving the car? That's the challenge. Because if you're driving and you leave the scene, the potential criminal sanctions are much greater than just being in the car. I don't think you have any responsibility for just being in the car unless you were doing something to distract the driver.
His only responsibility to follow through with the Lamborghini lease, that he wasn't driving the car, and he'll have to get in trouble for
that.
But that's about
it. But that's not something he's going to go to jail for.
Right.
And if he wasn't driving and he's supposed to be driving and somebody else is driving and crashes it, you got some potentially significant expense as it relates to repairing the Lamborghini.
Right.
But this isn't something that, you know, it's like 1 to 5 years in prison for leaving the scene of an accident involving injury. That's where this becomes a problem for whoever was driving. The problem, the challenge for the police is to prove that someone was driving, whoever that someone may be. The police reportedly suspect it was Rashee Rice, but they're going to have to prove it. Rashee Rice had not talked to police, and as of last night, he still hasn't. He has hired Royce West to represent him. He's a prominent lawyer in that area. He said on behalf of Rashee Rice, this is from a statement released yesterday, his thoughts are with everyone impacted by the automobile accident on Saturday. Rashee is cooperating with local authorities and will take all steps necessary to address this situation responsibly. Now, local authorities would dispute that he's cooperating because as of last night, they still haven't talked to him. And I look at that word responsibly, like from whose perspective? The responsible way to handle it from his perspective is to say not a damn word to anyone. I invoke my right against self-incrimination. Anything I say can and will be used against me. I'm not saying anything. You have to prove I was driving. Remember the Henry Ruggs case when that happened in 2021?
Right.
There was a period of time where there was a theory in the legal community in Nevada that maybe the argument was going to be you can't prove Henry Ruggs was driving because there was a passenger in the car. And you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt all elements of the crime. And that was kind of out there for a little while. It never went anywhere, and he ultimately took responsibility for the situation. But how do you prove, when you got two, three, four people in a car, how do you prove beyond a reasonable doubt that one of them was driving? That video becomes critical, but all we see, it looks like a couple of people getting out of the passenger side, and possibly Rashee Rice getting out of the passenger side. That black T-shirt, it looks like the person
wearing black T-shirt is the one that got out. Yeah, let's see that again, right? Because I never saw that picture that we showed the second time, right? The picture that we showed where the guy with the red bandana or do-rag there, right? You see him. That was the first time I'd seen that. So let's see the video again, if we can, at the end there.
See the video of the crash.
Yeah, right, and see exactly where he steps out of the car.
6:24 p.m.
You know, and
someone, it's good to have these devices on your car. I mean, there is no doubt about what
I think about it all the time. I have it on my, because the Tesla has it, and you're right. I think about it all the time. Like, thank God I have this, because I see somebody driving like a jerk, and I'm always like, yep. So you see that side, right there? He goes, yeah, there he is. That's it. So he's out of that side too. Now, hey, listen, I don't know. Is somebody smart enough to just crawl over the passenger, the middle console?
That was too quick.
Right? But that would be pretty quick, right?
That's too quick.
There's a few things that I didn't – I mean, one, thank God nothing happened, right? I mean, thank God that for that kind of racing that it wasn't, fatal for somebody, right? I mean, one of the innocent bystanders, whatever, right? I mean, for street racing on a highway – that was about as lucky as you can get for an accident, at least in my view and things I've seen in my lifetime and videos and all that. So, thank God for that. They've caused the most problems for themselves and Rashee Rice for himself by fleeing the scene. That's just where you're just like, damn, if you just stayed there and, the cops came and you said you were driving or, hey, my friend was driving, we would not be talking about this right now. We wouldn't. We would have heard a report that, hey, Rashee Rice got, picked up and he might have got brought down to the local, police station because he was racing too fast on the highway. But that's would have been about it. Now it's opened up a can of worms here of look at, Sims and Florio are doing Inspector Gadget stuff over here trying to figure it out. And everybody's going to be talking about it now because of this.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
It's two separate issues. The street racing in and of itself is something that puts people in serious potential jeopardy. It's no different than DUI. It is a misuse of the highway. It is people operating their vehicles in a way they should not with other vehicles around. It shows no regard for the property or the lives of the others
more important.
Involved.
Right.
Somebody could have died.
Right.
And as of Sunday night, somebody was still in the hospital. So it's not like there were no injuries. Mark Donovan, the
I didn't mean it like that. I wasn't trying to be
talking about it.
Yeah,
I'm not, I'm just making sure that we all understand the context. But from their own personal perspective, yes, if they had just stayed there and accepted the responsibility and not walked away, you don't have this different feel to it. There's a feeling to it that they weren't responsible. There's an irony in the statement from the lawyer that he's going to act responsibly, because the responsible thing to do, we all know this, when you are in any type of an accident, what's the first thing you do? You exchange insurance information with the other person. That's how it works. You don't leave the scene of an accident. You don't drive away. You don't leave on foot and just leave your car there. Are you kidding me? That's what gives this a vibe that just feels ugly.
Right.
It feels improper. It feels irresponsible. And it makes you wonder, I mean, the first thing I think when people leave the scene of an accident on foot, how drunk was the driver?
Yeah.
That's the first thing I think.
Right.
Now, there's no suggestion that there was any alcohol or other substances involved here, but that's the first thing I think when someone walks away from the scene of an accident. They don't want to be tested. They don't want to be sobriety test, breath test, blood test, whatever the jurisdiction requires.
Sure.
You go away, and by the time they find you, you're sober again.
Yeah.
That's what I always think, and that's why there's laws against leaving the scene of an accident.
Of course, yes, right. I'm with you there. That's where my mind goes, you know. Again, as an ex-football player who, you know, hey, I was young and dumb and did stupid things, and I get that. I had friends that were like that too. No doubt. I mean, when I first heard the story, I thought the same type of things. Oh, man, did he have a drink? Oh, man, was there liquor in the car? Oh, man, did somebody have some weed, you know, in a backpack or whatever? And they were like, damn, we got to get out of here. I mean, you know, those are all those type of things that you wonder about, right? So, yeah, we'll see where it goes. But he certainly got some issues he's going to have to deal with here. We know that. And, yeah, Kansas City Chiefs, receiver position. We know that's, you know, kind of been an issue with the Chiefs the last few years. Rashee Rice seems like he's on, you know, that trajectory of being kind of the guy for the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's the last thing they want to deal with. And, of course, this is not what he wants to deal with in his young career here.
I was talking last night to someone from another team, just mainly out of curiosity as to how this works as it relates to league discipline or team discipline. If there is some issue that sticks to Rashee Rice, it's an open question as to whether the team has the ability to act or whether this is a personal conduct policy matter. One thing I know is only one punishment can be applied to the player. So once the team decides to do something, if it does anything, the league can't. If the league does something, the team can't. I think a lot of this just depends on what potential violations of the personal conduct policy might have happened here. If he wasn't driving, I don't know what violations of the personal conduct policy there might have been. So that's where it's just a separate from the criminal investigation is trying to get to the bottom of the street racing, the leaving the scene. Then there's what the team will do,
somebody,
what the league will do.
Yeah. Somebody
both
jumped over the middle console, right? That to me is something. Nobody got out of the driver's seat. Nobody got out. Somebody was smart enough in the car to go, let's go that way, so they're not going to know.
Or just stay there.
Or maybe they stayed.
I think if we watch it happens so fast. It happens so fast. I don't think anybody in that situation has the presence of mind to think,
I don't know about that.
There might be a camera on the car in front of me. Like, how do you even know you're being videotaped?
Well, because it's 2024. That's the point. There's always a videotape.
Big brothers everywhere.
These guys are
all of us.
You know, and again, this is where football players and myself, you know. Yeah, you know, football players, they can think pretty quick on their toes in little instances like this. But yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting. It's only three people, right? I mean,
are both doors open?
Both doors on the right side are open there, yeah. Right? Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see it piece together. Like I said, I'm just glad nobody was seriously, really fatality injured. All of that. I hope, you know, prayers to the person in the hospital still as of Sunday. We know that, but damn, yeah. I mean, what? Come on. That's just one of those where you know, as a father who's 43 years old and has a daughter who's, you know, starting to drive here, where you just want to go to Rashee Rice. Come on, man. You got too much in front of you. You know, life is good. It's only going to get better. Stay on the straight and narrow. There's no point in racing somebody, you know, down the street in a car, which I know I saw things online too, Mike, that people thought maybe the Corvette was also Rashee Rice's here. So they might both be cars here.
And he owns... Right. And he owns one and leases the other.
Gotcha.
So it's just him and his friends. We're going to go out racing on the Dallas streets tonight.
Right.
Because there's photographs of Rashee Rice heading off to the Super Bowl driving a Corvette.
That
apparently looks a lot like the Corvette
that
is right there in that crash. There he goes off to the Super Bowl back on February 5. Now, there are plenty of black Corvettes out there, but it's entirely possible that he owns... or leases both of them. We know he's leased the Lamborghini, according to the company that owns the Lamborghini. It's possible that he owns the Corvette, too. And that's where the street racing laws have been beefed up in Texas. The police can confiscate and sell cars involved in street racing.
Wow.
And, you know, for the people who have really nice, fast, expensive cars, that's like their life. You take away their car and sell it, that's a hell of a deterrent for street racing. It could be that both those cars are gone, that Rashee Rice is going to have to buy a new Lamborghini Urus for the company that owned it, and if that Corvette was something he had separately bought, that may be gone too.
Wow, yeah, I didn't know about that one. That's a new wrinkle that I've you know, first time I've ever heard that one, that they could take your car. But yeah, that'll make you think twice about street racing. Either way, Chiefs got a little problem on their hand here. Be interested to see what the league does here. It's going to be interesting to see how Rashee Rice and, you know, his crew and the lawyer handle the whole situation, and we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, I mean, not a good look. Not a good look for him right now, and, you know, a young guy that you hope learns from this situation.
And I guess that street racing has been a big enough problem in Texas that they had to do something to beef up the law.
It's becoming one everywhere.
They'll take over.
Yeah.
They'll take over a street and have races on the street.
Right. Yeah, it's becoming a thing.
Like Greece.
Everywhere.
Like Thunder Road in Greece.
Yeah, it's a problem in the Northeast here, in Jersey and everything like that. You know, we had someone that we were, you know, we knew and was help my family, right? A young lady who's 18 years old, and she went out with her friends street racing and all that. Snuck out of the house late at night, right? And they were going to go meet somewhere with all the kids in street race or whatever, and that car got in an accident, and she passed away, right? So it's a real problem going on everywhere in the country right now, and needs to be cracked down on.
By the way, Grease holds up very well. The movie with John Travolta. Well,
I don't know about that. That's challenge
it
flag
holds
there.
Up very well.
Right.
No, it's one of those movies, because there are movies that they made in the 70s and 80s that you watch them now and you're like, why did I ever like that? You go back and watch Grease again, if you ever did watch it before. Anybody out there that watched Grease and enjoyed it in 1978 or so when it came out, it still holds up and it's still fun to watch. And at the end,
I'm
they
not
do
sure
have
about that
a
one.
Race
That's one I'm not sure
Thunder
I'm going to
go
back and watch. You know, and I've watched it before, right? I mean, yes, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm going to buy into that.
It's
one.
Just it's corny, but it's fun. It's
yeah.
just fun. You always say I hate fun. Grease is fun. It's okay. fun.
Is 78? That was when that movie was. I thought that was earlier than that. Yeah, okay. I don't know why.
77 at the earliest.
Okay.
Yeah, 78, 77. Travolta had Saturday Night Fever and then Grease.
Oh,
and that was
you
like,
should do you that. Know, you could pull off that look, slick your hair back like that, put on a black T-shirt, get the cigarette box and twist it up in your shirt, right? I could see you pulling off that look. You should try that out.
my toupee might come loose, the oil. And, you know, I can understand the attraction of street racing. I mean, yeah, I'm closing in on 59. I got this Audi down the
steps. Yeah, everybody likes to drive fast. I know. I got a heavy
foot.
Let's go
race. You want to race? Where do you want to meet? Yeah. I'll beat that Tesla. I mean, that's human nature. We like to go fast.
Oh.
From the time we learn how to ride a bike,
right,
we want to go fast.
No doubt.
We always want to go fast. You got to resist that. That's what you do. There's that word responsible again. The responsible thing to do is resist the temptation to do that, especially under a setting where somebody else could get injured.
I got a heavy foot. I understand. Yeah.
I will admit from time to time, if I'm on an open stretch of road and there's no other cars around, I will maybe, you know,
step on it.
Violate.
Yeah, you don't have to ask me. I'm known for that in my family. I am literally the guy who's like, oh, there's an open stretch of road. Watch out. Dad's about to step on it.
I know. I'm alone in the car, so there's nobody else who would get injured if I would, like, you know, make a bad move and flip the thing. But why do they make the speedometer go up to 200 miles an hour? That's entrapment. Like, I think there was a time when back in the 70s when the speed limit was 55 nationally.
Yeah.
For a long time, the speed limit was 55.
It's still here. Like, in the Northeast, we can't get a damn highway that's above 55. And I'm like, with the modern car, I mean, the damn cars can go in reverse 55 now and be safe. Like, can we just speed it up a little bit in the Northeast?
But back in the 80s, like, the cars would peg out at 85.
Yeah, right. I do
the
remember
American
that.
Cars, I had a Ford.
Right.
I had a Ford where it maxed out at 85. You had no idea how fast you were going above 85 miles an hour, which takes a lot of the, I don't want to say fun, but the whole idea is the dial goes to 200. Not that I want to drive 200, but if I'm going one-third of the capacity of the speedometer, you kind of feel like you're not doing justice to the car. So again, this is that nature that we have.
We all got
to go fast.
Right.
But what they were doing on Saturday,
that's another level,
is highly irresponsible.
Exactly.
It's highly irresponsible because it jeopardizes others. One thing, if you're going to jeopardize yourself and nobody else, open stretch of road, nobody else around, that's one thing. If you're going to do that stuff, weaving in and out of traffic, we were somewhere not that long ago, and there's a guy on a motorcycle who was shooting the gaps between cars. It's like, well, the only person he's probably going to kill is himself.
Is himself, for sure.
But it's crazy to see that kind of behavior.
Yeah,
crazy.
No, it is. It's totally crazy. You're right. I get people like that. That is one of the things, you know, you brought up the Tesla, right? I got that Model X with the wings or whatever. But that is something that does happen to me. And listen, I drive fast, and I'm a pretty aggressive driver, so I'm not going to try to sit here and act like I'm Mr. Perfect here in that department. But I do have a lot of people, because I have that car, they want to race me, right? I'll look over, and I'll be like, oh, this person's racing me, and I have no idea. I'm just driving, and I want to be like, I want to roll down my window, and like, if I knew I was racing you, I'd blow by your car. I'd have put it in sanity mode and see you later, right? But, yeah, you got to fight those urges. There's no doubt about it. With the cars becoming more powerful and easier to control and all of that, yeah, you worry about that, especially with, you know, when I was younger. Like I said, I wasn't afraid to be a little more aggressive and stupid. You just think you're invincible when you're at the age of 24 and 25.
See, I don't want an electric car. I want a car that has that rumble to it. I was telling Mike.
Move on with the times. Gas is bad. It's ruining our planet. Move on with the times. And your gas car can't even, you could have no chance in a race against me and my Tesla. So get, you want to win. Don't you like winning? Don't you like winning? See, we're explaining how Rasheed Rice gets in a race, right? They were in the house. They're like, are you kidding me? You think the Lamborghini could beat the Corvette? Right, but that doesn't mean you should do what he did, and we're not going to do that either.
I was talking to Mike McDaniel at the Scouting Combine about this because we have the exact same car. It's an Audi RS7, and I told him that I've got a camera at my door that I pass with my car. And sometimes when I'm checking the cameras and I see that I drove past in my car, because it's got audio on it too, because it's the doorbell, I'll just stop and listen to the car roll by because
it sounds
so good.
Damn.
Because when you're in it, you can't appreciate it. when you in, like when you're inside with the door shut, you don't hear that throaty, you know, that rumble, that throaty, like, you know.
Yeah, you do like grease. Oh, let's go get the car.
Go Grease Lightning. You're burning up the quarter mile.
Right.
Go Grease Lightning. I don't remember the rest of the words, or the words, but I do remember there's some racy lyrics in Grease Lightning. So, I won't be quoting those.
Okay.
But there is at least one for 1978. And I started asking questions. Hey, Mom, what does this mean? Yeah, that's racy.
I don't even know that.
That's enough of that. That's something for the break.
Okay.
Even then, hot mic. Okay, so the Chiefs making other news. Carson Wentz, second overall pick in the 2016 draft, has a new home. After that shot of espresso he had with the Rams last year, didn't have to wait all offseason long. Doesn't have to wait into the regular season. Doesn't have to wait into December, I think it was, when he finally gets a job. He's with the Chiefs. And you know what? I think this might be a middle finger to Woodrow Johnson, if his first name is Woodrow and not Woody. I think it's Wood. I think his name's like Robert Wood Johnson IV. Anyway, you know, I think they may have wanted Zach Wilson. I haven't heard that, but they're one of the teams you look at their depth chart and say, who's backing up Patrick Mahomes? Well, now, at least for now, it's Carson Wentz. We had always thought that Zach Wilson would be a good fit in Kansas City. Learn from Andy Reid. Learn from Patrick Mahomes. Turn your career around. Get the hard reset button. But the Jets want what they want, and they say if we can't trade him, we're going to keep him. So the Chiefs possibly pivot to Carson Wentz instead. Either way, a guy who's got some skills now gets a chance to be rehabilitated almost a decade into his career by Andy Reid.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great spot for him. We know that, right? I mean, and listen, I think you and I both thought, you know, Zach Wilson made sense there, but I don't know if I thought Zach Wilson made sense there as being the backup quarterback, right? I think he's a guy that truly needs to be, like, the third stringer. Like, he needs to, like, there can't be any chance he plays this year. He needs a year of, like, mechanics, coaching, let me learn an offense and not have to, you know, try to learn it on the fly or do anything like that. Carson Wentz, I think, protects the Kansas City Chiefs a little bit more too, right? I think if you're the Chiefs, you're going, wait, hey, we like Zach Wilson. We like his talent. We like all that, surely. But wait, if Mahomes got hurt in week 5, do we really think he can, you know, run the offense and do things the way we want him to do and we're going to win games? I would go, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I love his talent, but we haven't seen that at a consistent level yet, right? Wentz, I know it hasn't been perfect, but we've seen Wentz play, you know, extended periods of time of really good football, right? He's got starting caliber traits. We know that too, right? So I think it protects them a little bit more with a move like Carson Wentz, who has experience, played in playoff games. I mean, we've seen him play at a MVP-ish type of level before that. The one thing we always talked about with Carson Wentz, right, was one thing that we kind of hear everywhere. The guy, the leader, not being able to kind of get in the locker room and be like one of the guys all that way. Well, if there's a spot where he and his agent could have picked to learn how to be that guy, damn, it's Kansas City. Because we know Mahomes is that guy. Mahomes is the master of, hey, like, I'm one of the guys. I'm the quarterback. I'm the leader. I'm the boss. I'm the general. But yet I'm still one of the guys. Let's drink a beer. Let's go watch a game, blah, blah, blah. And I think Carson Wentz could really learn something from Patrick Mahomes in that department.
You know, he's always had skills.
Right.
And you're right. 2017, his second season, he was on track to be the MVP, playing the Rams in L.A. in December, tore the ACL, opened the door for the very unlikely football equivalent of Slumdog Millionaire, where they just kept pulling one out of their butt week after week after week and ultimately won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles at quarterback. But then there was the whole – remember, he gets thrown out of Philadelphia and he lands with a family member. We did the whole – Fresh Prince of Bel-Air thing with that. Like, he gets kicked out of his parents' house and he goes and he moves in with his uncle Frank in Indianapolis, where, you know, there's that connection back to the Eagles in 2017. I know him. I need a starter. And hell, he started 17 games in 2021 with the Colts. But the thing is, he's got that propensity, apart from the locker room stuff, which goes all the way back to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He does dumb things.
He does.
When he gets into these, when he gets
big
into
situations,
these moments,
right? Yeah.
Where, you know, and we see this from time to time where the player tries to do more than he's capable of doing. And I can relate to that from a much lower maximum natural skill set. You want to do something more than what you're capable of doing. And that's when you do something stupid, like throw a pick six with your left hand
right
in your
week
own end
17
zone. Remember
or,
that?
Yeah, that was week 16, right? Was that? Yes, right. I do remember that. Or no, that wasn't
it was
that
against
year.
The Chargers?
That was
Chargers.
Yeah, I think it was the actually. They lost to the Raiders and the Jaguars late in the year. It was the Tennessee Titans, I believe. I want to say it was that
okay,
game. Maybe
right.
I'm wrong because maybe I'm thinking of Matthew Stafford getting swung around in his own end zone and doing that too. I can't remember, but your point is real. Yes. He had a propensity to do that type of stuff, right? Stuff that you'd go, wait, you've played too much, or you know, you're too good to do that right there, like to just make that kind of like rookie type mistake. Definitely popped up a little more than you would think for a guy that played that much.
Carson Wentz has started 93 regular season games in his career. He has a record of 47-45-1. He has completed 62.7% of his passes, 22,292 yards, 153 touchdown passes, and 67 interceptions. We have this perception of the guy that would suggest 67 touchdown passes and 153 interceptions. He has been effective. I think it's the combination of dumb stuff in critical moments and not a great locker room guy.
Right.
That's what caused him to get
his last chance. And Nick Foles
coming
in and taking his job, right, and doing good.
That, right.
Yep. Go ahead, though. Sorry.
He goes to Washington in 2022, which wasn't that long ago, grand scheme of things. And, you know, he was the guy, and then he gets banged up a little bit, and then it's Taylor Heineke. And remember there was that time that Ron Rivera kind of stormed out of the press conference after the Thursday night game against the Bears because they were criticizing Carson Wentz. So, and then he just like falls off the map. That's what's so weird about it. Last year, nobody wanted this guy, and it wasn't until December, literally, that he lands with the Rams, and now at least he gets a chance to be involved for the offseason program.
He's
training camp, compete, make the team, be the number two, get a chance to play at some point. And, you know, we saw Geno Smith do it, and Geno Smith had a far thinner resume as a starter before he embarked on this journey back to being a starter again. But, you know, Carson Wentz still might have some good football left in him. He is, I'm looking for the age here, 31 years old, just turned 31 in late December. So as football quarterbacks go,
yeah,
he's got 5, 6, 7, 8 years left.
I would think so. I mean, he's got some high-level starting quarterback caliber traits. I mean, we talked about 2017 MVP type of football. 2019, right, the year they went to the playoffs and, you know, he got hit with Jadeveon Clowney and the concussion in the wild card game, right? I mean, let's not forget, he carried the Eagles at the end of the season, carried them. They had nothing on offense. It was just Carson Wentz making plays and doing all that. He has shown that ability. Mike, he is the guy that we talk about all the time, like what you talked about, like to pertain to last year, right? Gosh, do we want to bring Carson in as the backup? He's kind of bigger and faster and has a stronger arm than our starter. Do we really want to do that? It might be, gosh, I mean, our starter has a few bad weeks or whatever. Man, the team's going to see Carson. He's that guy a little bit. Where, yeah, it's not perfect that way, and then I think the locker room stuff and all the things we've heard like that are play into the spot he's in. But, I mean, does Carson Wentz deserve to be on a roster and be a backup quarterback to that point? Absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, you just said that. I mean, his resume, his stats, everything there, they certainly justify being a backup, right? I mean, they borderline deserves, like, you low-end starting quarterback consideration, really, when you break it down. But, yeah, he's got to still learn some nuances, how to rein it in. That's what happened to Washington. It's dumb interceptions. It's forcing the ball. It's, you know, like you said, wait, why the play's over. Take the sack. What are we doing here, right? Situational football. Here it is, the Titans play that I talked about. You know, there it is. I mean, that's right. That's rookie year, like third game of the year for a rookie who's an incredible athlete. And you're just like, well, he's learning. He's always gotten away with these things. But to switch it to your left hand with nobody there, that's insane. Right. That's insane.
I haven't seen a throw like that with the left hand that bad and a guy wearing number two since you. Never mind.
I knew you were going there. I knew. As soon as you said left hand, I said, oh, I know where he's going with this.
You know, I'd rather have him than Jimmy Garoppolo.
There's better, more high end, for sure. Yeah.
One's a meathead who can play, one's a meathead who can't play. I'm joking when I say that, and I say meathead in a lovable way. But I mean, if we're referring to meatheads as a propensity to do dumb things at a bad time, they both have shown a propensity to do dumb things at a bad time.
That's true.
I'd rather have Carson Wentz because he will do better for me than Jimmy Garoppolo ever will.
Yeah, I don't disagree there. His high end, his top end game is better than Garoppolo. But again, you know, Garoppolo's for the most part, has been around good team situation. He's got some bonehead interceptions, but not quite like that, right? To where, you know, that kind of stuff there scares people, coaches, when they see that. They're like, whoa, I don't know what to trust, you know, can I trust him? What is he going to do, right? And then I think there's, unlike a Garoppolo, who, again, has his bad interceptions that you alluded to, you're like, what? His are more a little traditional, too, at times. You know, Wentz at times can also be like, really? I mean, you thought you were going to fit that ball in there? There's three defenders there? There's just a little too much of that the offensive guru type, the careless, crazy left-handed throw, it'll scare them, but the tie-in talent is real, like you're saying, and I think it's a smart signing by the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's a good job by Carson Wentz and his representation, you know, getting him to a spot that makes sense for him and maybe can do him some good following a guy like Mahomes and let him learn that aspect of quarterbacking that's very important that people don't realize sometimes.
And also learn from Andy Reid. And, you know, what you're talking about is the flip side to the thing that Peter King would say about Bill Walsh. If you see a guy do something great, if I see him do it once,
yeah,
I can get him to do it all the time. I think this is, if I see that once, I never know when that's going to happen, and I can't have
that. There you
that.
Go, right.
I never know when that's going to rear its ugly
right.
head.
That was Carson Wentz in year six of his career. He's doing that, right, yeah. Exactly.
Can't have a guy on my team that is capable of doing that.
Yeah. That scares. That scares offensive coaches. Coaches want to trust their quarterback, and they know what he's going to do in certain situations. And I think he's broken that trust a few times, you know, throughout his career.
Well, it looks like the Chiefs might have a plan B at quarterback in the event they need it. They might need plan B when it comes to how they're going to pay for the renovation of their stadium, because today is the day.
Whoa.
That people in Jackson County, Missouri, will vote on whether or not to extend a sales tax that will fund new stadium for the baseball Royals and renovate Arrowhead Stadium for the Chiefs. The polling suggests it's very close. It shouldn't be, you would think, given the popularity of the Chiefs. But the other thing I've learned over the years, a lot of people in any given community, number one, don't care about the local sports teams, and number two, do not want their taxpayer dollars subsidizing the billionaires who own the teams. Here's a little flavor from Mark Donovan, the Chiefs president, as to what happens if today's vote does not give the Chiefs the free money that they want.
I think when you look at what we've done in this particular case is we've taken a really good partnership and we've made it much better for the county. And for all of that, we're asking to extend the existing tax. Mm-hmm. If that isn't something that sways people, if that's not something that people get on board with, we understand that. But at that point, you've got to sit back and say, we've done an awful lot here. And we were told no. Well, when you're told no, you've got to sit back down and say, okay, where are we? What is the situation? What are our options? And that's what we'll be forced to do. Our plan, our hope, our commitment has always been and continues to be to make Arrowhead the next great stadium for the next 25 years.
Yeah, look, they have already made it abundantly clear all options are on the table when the lease expires early next decade. 2031, I think, is the free agent year for the Chiefs. And folks who are Chiefs fans who live in that area react to that by saying, well, all it means is they'll still be the Kansas City Chiefs. They'll just find the stadium somewhere else in this locality. I didn't sense any kind of narrow focus there.
No, I didn't
either. Think about it.
We haven't got that sense at all.
A team that will still have Patrick Mahomes playing in 2031. He'll still be playing. He'll be 35, and I assume he's going to want to play until he's 40. He'll still be on the team. They'll likely still be very good. They'll probably have another Super Bowl ring or two or three on their hands by the time that rolls around. They'll be an attractive commodity if they don't get what they want, and their option is we're going to see if there's another community out there that will give us what Kansas City won't. That's why the Raiders are in Las Vegas. There was never going to be public money for a stadium in Oakland, and here comes Las Vegas with $750 million in free money. Will there be another community out there that says, we want the Chiefs? We'll give you the stadium. We'll give you the stadium if you'll come play here.
Yes, that's what there will be. There will be. That's where Kansas City's got to be careful. Am I crazy? I mean, to me, this is a no-brainer. Again, I'm not for like helping out the billionaires either. I understand that. But that doesn't mean they always just have the money to build a stadium. I think that's a little bit lost in translation at times, where we're just like, well, they got a billion, so they should be able to build a stadium and pay it for themselves. Well, no, that's like all the money they got. They got to sell the team to do that, so that they can do that. It's not necessarily apples to apples all the way. But, like, two, come on, the Kansas City is Kansas City because of that, the Chiefs. I mean, that's who put the city on a map in general, you know, back in the 60s to a degree, right? Or at least the you know, and the baseball team has been a part of that culture, right? I mean, crazy to think that, man, that city makes a lot of money off the Chiefs and everything they do, and, you know, the fans and everything I see downtown and people traveling into town. I mean, I would think it's worthwhile of the city to want to invest in this right now. I'm talking to you. I'm asking you. I don't know. It just seems like a no-brainer from that standpoint. You know, I just think of teams and go, well, you know, how did that work out for the Cleveland Browns? I don't know. That city never seemed the same until Cleveland Browns came back and they had to reinvent them, you know, as they were leaving to become the Baltimore Ravens. And I don't want to see that happen to the Kansas City Chiefs. I like them there. You know me, I'm a traditional guy, and I like all that stuff.
I mean, there's two sides of this.
Yeah.
Obviously, the idea that the sports team brings some sort of a benefit to the community, that it's a building in which other things can be done to generate revenue. Now, if it's not dome, then it's not in a climate there where, you know, you have good weather all year long, you have a potential problem as it relates to maximizing that revenue you can get from other events. But the one side of it is, hey, this is a public building that we just happen to play our games in, but there's all sorts of other stuff and it makes a lot of money and yada, yada. I get that. The other side of it is we all have to buy our house. Nobody's giving me free money to buy my house. I got to pay my taxes and buy my house. And I'll take out a loan if I have to. And the Crafts own their stadium and Stan Kroenke owns his stadium. And, you know, there's something to be said for not having these local authorities micromanaging everything you do.
I hear that.
You
I
build mean, the stadium.
A pain in the butt.
You
yeah.
own the stadium.
Yeah.
You make all the money from all the concerts and stuff you have at the stadium. You run it like a business. And there's profit potential there. Instead of like, well, we'll just take the taxpayer money and, you know, we won't make the money off of it. I mean, the 49ers got themselves into a horrible partnership with Santa Clara where they just, like, hate each other, and they have since the day
But don't
that
you
they
think, like, they
stadium.
Would do that if they could? Like, I mean, I feel like everybody would do it if they could. They just can't. Like, Kroenke's got, you know, unlimited cash. Kraft is smart and figured out and has the cash to do it. Like, I feel like all owners would do it if they could. Obviously, I think the Hunts are telling you they don't have that liquid cash to do that. At least that would be my assessment. I'm not saying I'm right about that, but
well,
just
then
talking.
Sell the team.
Yeah.
Then sell the team. Sell the team to somebody else who can pay for the stadium and run the team. Because the reality is, in today's NFL, there's no excuse for any owner to not have enough money or a plan to pay for his or her own stadium. And I think that's where this resentment comes in, where you've got average people who, oh, we're just continuing the tax. Well, yeah, and that means that we could be paying less for things if we don't continue the tax. We're going to have more money to buy other stuff with.
Right.
But instead, we're feathering the nest of somebody whose nest is already full of feathers. So that's that. But there's always another community out there that will do whatever it has to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's either a stadium or a monorail. So you got, you know, that's the great Simpsons episode. You just go from town to town and they got extra money. Let's build a football stadium and let's attract the Chiefs here. That, and, you know, most teams don't have to come out and say it. It is a little jarring that Donovan basically said it. He stopped short of saying we'll move to another city. But when you say all options are on the table, what's that mean?
Yeah.
They could go anywhere. They could go to London, for crying out loud. And if the same family that owns the team has already moved it once. They moved out of Dallas because they couldn't compete with the Cowboys. And so they moved to Kansas City. Hell, maybe they move back to Texas. Maybe they move to San Antonio. At least it'll be closer for Clark Hunt and his family.
Seriously.
Who lives in Dallas still.
Right. Yeah, no, I hear you. That I would certainly be scared. I would. With this team and the notoriety and that quarterback, you know, they will be wanted by some city or somewhere. But it'd be interesting. And again, I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do with their hard-earned money or all that right there. But I'm a traditional guy in the fact that, hey, the Chiefs are a fabric of the NFL, the AFL. They, you know, they've made a name for themselves in Kansas City going back.
They still will be.
I know. Well,
they still will be.
I know. But I like it with KC on the arrow, right? I like the KC arrowhead and the traditions that go along with that. But be interesting today to see where this goes today in the vote.
Yeah. Take it up with Clark. Take it up with Clark. Clark, if the vote fails, you better find another way to renovate your stadium. You know, I know one thing for sure. They won't be the Dallas Texans again. That name is taken. The Texans name is claimed. The copyrights are held by the franchise in Houston. We've done something unprecedented here. I think we've gotten a couple of minutes into the second hour of the program, which means we got six segments left. The NFL has done something that I believe is unprecedented as well. It has proven that the internal secret rigged kangaroo court might not be so rigged after all. We'll tell you the latest when PFT Live continues right after this.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.